Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Rights for Women would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land upon which this podcast is recorded throughout Australia. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture. We recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and want-to-be author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
The Bush Telegraph by Fiona MacArthur. I'm just so thrilled to be here. It's so lovely to see a book out there, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Yeah, congratulations.
And with the COVID thing, you know, you don't actually get out to do things or to have events or anything. And I was just so thrilled. About half an hour ago, I had this amazing email come through from my local Big W in Kempsey, and they said, oh, Fee, we've only got 16 books, but there's another 50 coming. And because you can't have a book launch for a while, we can put it out. And they built this amazing table of these beautiful books and cups and saucers and a Kubra hat and a riding crop and all these flowers. Oh, and it's just so beautiful. And they've set it up in the bookstore. Big book department in town, and it's like, oh wow, that's really, really cool.
Yeah, so good to get behind authors like that. It's wonderful. Yep.
Yeah, it's a town thing. So the Bush Telegraph, well, I can tell you a little bit about it. It's set right out back Queensland. So I actually set a couple of books out there, Red Sand Sunrise and The Baby Doctor. Were both set out there, and you actually did meet Maddie in The Baby Doctor because she was the young mum that had the baby by herself in a deserted building. And this is 11 years later, so none of the other characters really come through, but Maddie does. And it's because I always wanted to write Maddie's story.
Oh, you get to go back and tell her story.
Yeah, I get to go back. And also, as a midwife and as someone who just loved, you know, talking to young mums, doing antenatal classes with young mums, I love the fact that Maddie was a young mum and she's 11 years later, she has really, you know, made a stand and become this incredibly efficient hotshot ER nurse, and she still wants to go back out back.
Oh, good on Maddie.
Yeah, so she's a really, heroic character from my eyes. So, it's really nice to have her story.
Ooh, can you read a little excerpt for us, Faith?
Yeah, sure. So Maddie actually meets one of the station owners who had been in Sydney and had a really unfortunate marriage, was accused of some stuff that he didn't do, and... So he's come back and thought that, you know, he could make a fresh start, but the Bush Telegraph's really taken off and the word spread and the rumours actually followed him. And Maddie's had her own problems with the Bush Telegraph coming back and people saying what happened to her. Even though it was more kindly intended, it's still you don't have that privacy. So Maddie and Connor actually meet and strike sparks, but both of them, like, he's really distrustful of women. She's not looking for another relationship. She's come back to town to prove that she can stand on her own. So it's pretty hard to fall sort of in lust with someone when, when you don't want to. But anyway, so Connor invites her out to his station. So I should actually just do a little bit of backstory. Jay Ford and I went with, as you did, to Outback Writers.
We did, yes. Outback Writers Festival.
And did they take you up to Rangelands afterwards?
Yes, up for the sunset. Did you go up there for that? Yeah, it was beautiful.
This is where this is set.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's why I'm so excited. Okay, so that's really cool because the excerpt that I'm going to read is that area.
Oh, so you're brilliant.
Okay, so they climbed back up the slippery path with the children still scampering ahead of them. Once back on top of the mesa, Jaden climbed on his bike and Connor opened the door for Maddie and Bridget to climb into the vehicle. They took off again across the top, past the rough track where they'd entered, and did a slow turn from just beyond the jump-up road, where the round end of the mesa fell away to a dizzying drop. Connor parked the truck and they all climbed out. He opened the back tailgate and created a table. "I'll just set up for our sundowners." "You want help?" Maddie asked. It felt wrong to let him do it all. He waved her away. "I'm fine. Go and enjoy. See how the light touches that open plain? It's never been cleared, so they're natural grasslands, and you can see the small lines of trees and the acacia." Jaden stood pointing things out to Bridget, and then Bridget crouched down and studied the fluffy mulla mulla flowers. Connor was right. The afternoon light hitting the floral filaments turned the flowers into sunbursts, pale green and yellow. They did resemble lambs' tails waving in the breeze. When she turned to look back to the mesa in the distance, it was painted a brilliant orange. The trees glowed gold, the cliff walls shimmered with red, and the afternoon light poured across the grasslands like orange cordial spilled across the countertop. Little tree lines lay like baby snakes of green against the gold of the plainlands. Do you remember that?
I do.
Do you remember those colours?
It takes me back. It's gorgeous. And that the image of that sunlight spilling like orange cordial, fabulous.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's what you really love about these big contemporary fiction books, isn't it? It's because you can detail not just the characters and not just interwoven stories, but actually really get into the settings of the book.
Yeah.
And that's the joy of it.
Yeah. And, you know, that whole outback setting is just such a brilliant place to set a story, you know, and readers really respond to it, I find, as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think that doing it, even though my story isn't set in winter, and it really is as far as I'm concerned, but it's actually set in Spex, which is like down more towards Windora, because I needed to have a more isolated health centre. I needed Maddie to have to really manage on her own, even though there's a couple of really quirky older nurses, cranky, quirky older nurses, who were hoping that no one would come and use and be in charge of the health centre. They wanted to be retired and get their payout.
Okay.
So this young thing was not really a great idea. But, it's just that whole, when something happens, those health workers are just incredible. They just manage. And I don't know how they manage. And I spoke to a lady out there and I said, you know, what do you do when you're there on your own and some guy falls in front of you with a cardiac arrest and you have to, you know, be the main responder? And she's like, well, I have my protocols. I follow what I have to follow. I've got the phone. I do what they tell me on the phone and I maintain him until someone can come and get him.
Right.
And if he didn't have me there, then he would be worse off. So I just tell myself that.
Wow.
So it's like, what a hero.
So he's calm, under pressure like that.
So
let's rewind a little bit. I want to rewind a long way in a minute, but just in terms of this particular book, Fiona, it's a character that you've written about before in another book.
Yeah.
And can you just tell us a little bit about sort of the overall sort of plot line for this particular story?
Okay. So for this story, Maddie was saved in the baby doctor after she had the baby from her violent boyfriend who actually died in that book. So we don't have to worry about him in this book. And she was taken to Lord Howe Island, where she flew in and out to Sydney and did a lot of time away background, getting herself all her certificates that she needed for her registered nurse and midwifery and emergency care. But her daughter was minded by this older lady from the previous book, who had just died in the beginning of this book. So she's not in this book either. Right. But it's a big change for Bridget because she's 11. She was just going into year six. And, you know, this was she lived on an island. She didn't have to wear shoes to school if she didn't want to. You know, she knew everybody. She was like the darling of the island. And now she's been moved out to this horrid, hot, long place where you drive for hours to get anywhere. And when you get there, there's nothing there. So that's the background to the story. And then you've got Maddie, who's like come back to a town that she pretty well left with a tail between her legs. And she wants to come back and prove that she is a strong, independent woman, and she wants her daughter to see her mother as a strong, independent woman, not someone who was saved by other people. Mm. The problem with this is, of course, that she wasn't letting anybody in until she met Connor, and then it was like, I do not want to let you in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just such a fun book, and I loved the characters so much.
And is this a story that you've sort of had brewing for a while? Has it been on your back burner for some time?
I don't think so. I think a lot of it all came together when we went to Winton.
Okay.
It was like, now I get it. Now I get it. I mean, the deal to go to Winton, we spent a few days in Boulia, and I was going to the health centre there to talk to those people, and we did a lot of the min-min stuff because that's all in the book plan. And so, yes, the bits were there, but it didn't tie in until I'd been and I could see where it lived. Mm. It just flowed from then on. Loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, you had the setting and it sort of pulled everything together.
Yeah, pulled everything together.
Yeah, great. So for people who haven't read your books before, can we go back in time to when you first started writing and how that tied into your own career as a midwife?
Okay. So I was first published in 2001. But that was 10 years after I was trying to get a book finished. I had five little kids and it took me a long time to actually finish a book. I do lots of starts and send them off. And at that stage I was trying to sell to Harlequin Mills and Boone because I decided that that was how I was going to make my fortune. But it took 10 years and I finally did actually finish a book. And the first book that I finished was the first time I wrote about a midwife. So it all comes back to the fact that for 33 years, I was a rural midwife. I worked in a small country town. Our hospital delivered, you know, around the 300 babies a year mark. When you think about a city, it's like 3,000.
Wow.
Or if you think about Finifex, it would be one every 3 years, you know.
Yeah.
So, it was just, again, I didn't sell that story until I started writing about midwifery and something I was passionate about. And when I sold that story, I never went back to writing anything but midwife stories or midwife and doctor stories or midwife and nurse or ambulance or whatever, because that's where my heart was.
Mm.
And, so there's I think I keep forgetting. I think there's 35 of those.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And I'll do one a year because I really enjoy that focus on the romance once a year. I love to do that, just really focus on those two people. And it's half the size of a big book.
Mm.
But I really enjoy the larger format, as I said before, with the contemporary romantic fiction. And I call it romantic fiction because I don't kill anybody. No heroes or heroines die at the end.
Yeah,
so that's my definition of romance and non-romance.
Okay. Yeah, I like that distinction.
So I'm really, really fortunate with that. And the other things I write, I've just finished my third book for Thule, which is an American company, called the Outback Bride series, which I actually was so lucky to be included with Kelly Hunter and Catherine Hine and now Barb Hannay. Victoria Perman was in it.
Oh,
we've been writing these stories about this little town. And the series bit of it is like we're all in the same town, but everyone's really running off their own books. So I get to meet my characters from the previous books in my books. and Catherine's came out today as well. So her Serenity song came out today and mine came out at the beginning of the month. And Barb comes out in a couple of days. And Kelly's amazing Tilly came out I think about the first of the month. So
okay.
Yeah.
So do you then sort of help each other market the books, you know, because you're sort of in this like almost little collective of writers doing that.
Well, we do. We support each other, but writing for Thule, they're actually a really efficient marketing machine in America. And I wrote for Thule because I wanted to get my voice into America. And they've got this ready market and they're just such lovely readers that it's just like a different area. And I think in a way and I really enjoy it. So that's three different areas. Plus, you know, the self-publishing, which is a whole new venture and being lots of fun.
tell us a bit about that. What are you working on with your self-publishing?
So I had two books that I had the rights reverted to, and I was a little bit worried because when you fiddle with a book, I'm not really an editor, I'm a pants a writer. Mm. But I do have this really nice friend, Bronwyn Jamieson, who read my books and edited them for me, which was just delightful. And you get to choose your own covers and you get to make your own word length and you get to pop it up and you get to see them sell every day. It's very cool. Even one book or three books or like my mate Annie Seat, who sells like blinking 50 a day or 150 a day.
Annie's a legend. I've got to get her on the podcast too.
she's a legend. But it's just been everyone's so helpful when you're setting yourself up. It's like this collective of fun people. They're having fun and they want you to have fun too. So, give me a horse anytime you're ready.
So you've got lots of, I mean, they're all sort of in the same area, but you've got lots of different publishing hats really that you're wearing.
Yeah, but I've retired from midwifery. So officially retired 2 years ago, although I'm still a member of the College of Midwives. And so I'm still registered. So, yeah, we'll see. But I just think that it's time for the new young bloods to come on, you know. They can take the mantle and run with it. They're just amazing. And I've had my time and it was fabulous and now I get to write about it full time and that's really, really nice.
Yeah, So with the books like the book, so The Bush Telegraph, which is out today and that's what you've read the excerpt from, have you got plans for that one to sort of go into a series or anything, or is that more a standalone book?
I'm thinking it's a standalone book because I didn't really introduce any other characters that weren't tied off. And it's nice. That'll be the three books that are sort of linked. Red Sand Sunrise was linked to the woman who saved Maddie, and then The Baby Doctor was linked to this book with Maddie.
Okay.
So that's sort of the three. Not they're all standalone, but sometimes it's nice just to read something that's connected and I'm series. I love series books, so I'm addicted to them. But I think I'll just start a whole new series though.
You sound like you've got loads of ideas.
Thank you for reminding me because I'm just like 30,000 into this new book and I'm thinking I hadn't even thought of that. I need to start planting secondary people, and I was just about to tie this other young woman off and I don't think I will now.
Oh, my pleasure.
What a great idea. Thank you.
So while we're on that subject, tell us a bit about your writing process. When you first get your idea for the book, or it's been germinating for a while and you sit down to write, what happens then for you? Do you plot it out? Do you pants it? And how does it work for you?
Yeah, so I'm actually the person who sees that first scene. I saw Maddie going into the town with a daughter. That was the first scene. And I saw when Connor is hit by the car, which is really early in the book, he gets hit by the car. That's how they meet. But it's actually his son, Jaden, who ran over him. It all ties in. Yeah, it all ties in. So that was the scene that I had. And I write every morning, so I write early, probably get up, 4:35.
Wow.
And, well, it's dark, it's lovely. I go outside, I look at the stars, which are always, because I'm on a farm, there's no ambient light, and the stars are amazing. And then I come back inside and have tea and sit at the lounge. And as I look to the left out the window, that's where the paddocks are. And even though the sun doesn't rise up over there, the colours come from directly opposite from the ocean. So you've got like this, all the pinks and blues are incredible every morning. And mist, and then the cows.
Your photos on Facebook and Instagram are just gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just such a lovely place to live. And I get to see that because I'm up and I'm writing. And as long as I get, I mean, I even forced myself this morning. This is the fourth interview today.
Oh,
and I forced myself this morning to go down and just at least get a couple of hundred words, because the Penguin book, you know, you've got that 80 to 90,000 words. You've got to get those words in. It's only 60 days until it's due. You need to get it happening. And it also keeps you in the book. So that's part of the process as well. Being there every day, fronting up for even a couple of hundred words, preferably 1,000, you know, and it'll get you there. When a book comes out, it blows you up a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. You have a few little interruptions.
Yeah.
And my podcaster's wanting to speak to you.
Oh, no, it's really cool. It's really cool.
So are you, having written for quite a while now, are you someone that doesn't need to do a lot of revising, or how does that work for you?
Depends on the book. It does depend on the book. This book was pretty darn easy for some reason. It just seemed to go through. The last book, which was The Desert Midwife, required lots and lots of but one major revision right in the beginning that I nearly felt like saying, let's start again. I don't want to do this book.
Right.
But as I say to my editor now, you know, you really pushed me on that book, and I'm really, really pleased you did, because I love that book. So, yeah, it depends on you know, the story and the characters and what's happening in your life at the time, how smoothly things come. Sometimes if you get distracted for a long time, when you come back, you're not actually in that space where you should really go forward.
yeah, I've been there. and, of course, having a publisher deadline does help.
that's why I put my deadlines on for those other four books that are coming out October, end of October, November, December, January, because if I didn't put the deadlines on Amazon that these are the dates for these books, I wouldn't actually get around to putting them up.
Yeah.
And I probably was a little bit ambitious making it end of October. I should have made it end of November with this book due on the 1st of November. But I tossed it up and went, oh, no, she'll be right. Let's see what happens.
A bit of
Panadol will be fine.
For sure. So what else, Fiona, would you like people to know about the Bush Telegraph?
I guess just knowing that I look for a book that's going to leave a reader with a smile. There may be a few tears in the middle, you know. It's going to be a drama, but it's going to be a drama that's real about people you care about. So I want them to live through that life, to feel like they've lived in Spinifex for a little while, to pick up some pointers if they're ever in a situation where they need a little bit of putting their hand in for an emergency situation. I love that. And I'm not a teacher sort of. I'm just seeing little things that might just stick. And I'm always promoting natural birth. I'm always promoting the fact that we're actually designed to do it.
Okay.
Sometimes we need help and sometimes we don't. But if you were stuck in a situation where you didn't have any help, this is what would pan out.
Yeah.
So I love that. The other thing is I want them to finish that book with a smile. You know, I want them to put it down and say, oh, I wish that wasn't ended, but I'm so glad it ended the way it did. That's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah, fantastic sort of book I like to read, that's for sure. Yeah, and write, I have to say.
And write.
Yeah, something hopeful.
Yeah. And in these times, I think it's great. I want an uplifting book. I'm not going to read something that's going to cast me down or that I don't care about the characters. I have to really be invested in them.
Yeah, and I think, as you say, I think now in particular people are really looking for those sorts of reads too.
Yeah, I hope so.
And you've had some other wonderful news very recently. Can you tell us about that?
So on the 22nd of August, we had the Romance Writers of Australia Romantic Book of the Year competition was announced. The winners were announced. So The Desert Midwife, the book that I said really pushed me, which is set in Uluru, and it's about a desert midwife who goes from Alice Springs right up to Katherine and visits all the communities on the way and then comes back Friday afternoon. And then she does some time in the birthing unit. So some of those young women who are really quite isolated from their families, because sometimes they jump on a bus to get to town and they have to stay in town for 2 weeks. And so they've got the space that they know. And, so it was sort of that was the basis of my heroine, who I absolutely adored. And it was an amnesia story, actually. It was an amnesia story, and she absolutely fell in lust and actually in love really fast with this amazing young doctor who was a widow and had a lot of baggage. And then they had an accident as he was going to propose to her. And then he didn't remember her.
Oh, no. So,
yeah, it was just a lovely story. But what I loved about that book was all the stuff we had to do for the Anangu people, you know, making sure that we had everything right for Uluru, making sure that we ran through the elders so that it was okay with them, that things were acceptable. Yeah. And actually, for an example, I had a young child being hit by a motorbike in a community, a small community, mm-hmm. a small Aboriginal community, and the elders came back and said, could we move it out of the community onto the road so that it wouldn't draw any bad vibes towards the community?
Oh, wow.
And it's like, ah, I can do that. No problem. I can do that.
Yeah.
And so really lovely little things like that, that, it was just such a special book. I just loved it so much. So, yes, anyway.
Yes,
just contemporary, for the contemporary fiction, which is, yeah, exactly what I was saying before about being allowed to have details and characters and settings and underlying social issues, which is something that I love to put in the book.
Yep.
And also, it's not so much social issues as a downer, but social issues as if you've got a problem, there are ways to come through it and there are people out there to help you and, you know, and a good ending.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, congratulations. That's so good. And fantastic that you got that for a book that, as you said, it challenged you and, you know, your editor did really push you hard on that. So what a buzz to get an award for that.
Yeah, it was. The only other nomination I had was in 2009. So this is my first Ruby. Last year was my first Koru for New Zealand. So things are, it's really nice to be a retired midwife and being able to really concentrate on my writing and not be in a rush all the time, torn between two careers.
Yeah, so, true. Yeah. And, you know, as we were saying earlier before we started chatting officially on the recording, just wonderful that, you know, after writing for quite a while now.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
And it's not that you write for the accolades, but to actually have that work and that skill recognised is fabulous after all these years.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. Thank you. It was an honour.
I think a great lesson to anybody out there listening who is an author, and maybe, you know, we all get in our doldrums at times and think, why am I bothering? Why am I doing this? But, you know, I think perseverance is the key in this job.
Absolutely. And just knowing that you're going to affect different people in different ways and that, you know, when someone actually sends you a review that's positive and wonderful, it's a privilege. It's not actually an expectation because everyone's life is different and you can push a button there that somebody really pulls away from and they're going to pull away from you and away from your book because it's uncomfortable and emotional. Yeah. And I accept those reviews as well because, you know, this is what we're dealing with. I hope to be dealing with these people are real, you know.
Yeah.
They are real people and they live real lives and that it's not actually drawn from any particular birth or woman or experience or anything. It's drawn from all the little bits that are in my aura from my life as a rural midwife for 33 years. And it's an honour to be able to put it in my books and touch people's lives, which is what I want to do.
Oh, it's fantastic, Fiona. It's wonderful. Well, finally, Fiona, where can people buy the Bush Telegraph and where can they find you online? And your other books.
And my other books. Okay, so obviously all the Penguin books are available in all of the bookstores and all the trade stores, the other stores like discount stores like Big W, Target, all those things. Get them off online through Booktopia and Book Depository and all those things, Amazon, of course. All the e-books, the books are all e-books. So you'll be able to buy them on Kobo and Apple and all those places. With my, if you wanted a book that was signed, you can go to my website, which is FionaMacArthurAuthor.com, and there's actually a bookstore there. Mm-hmm. If you did /bookstore, you'd find it. But if you just go to the main page and look for bookstore, it'll take you to a bookstore. And for $30, I will post it out in anywhere in Australia. And sign it and give you a little bookmark and something else in there. And, yeah, that's really fun. That's really fun. But I will tell you, when the when the self-published books come out, and we've got four Lyrebird Lakes coming out at the end of the year, they will also be available in print and in large print through my bookstore.
Great.
So yeah. There'll be books, of course, but books, large print. How cool is that? That you can actually make a book large print, and I can just get two, and then if someone wants one, I can just post it out.
Yeah, so, that's great, because there's a lot of readers out there that would really appreciate that. Yeah. And what about audio, Fiona? Any of your books in audio?
It's just such a fabulous story. Can I bore you again?
Yeah, tell us.
Really wanted audio, and it just wasn't happening for me. And eventually I nagged my agent, who nagged Audible, and I saw Christina at the romance conference and nagged her. And they bought Desert Midwife. It's like, oh, my goodness, my first book. And then they bought all the rest, which was just like, yes.
Oh, fantastic.
So all of my England books are in audio. And I asked for Christina Lee. Christina Lee, who actually read the Leanne Moriarty ones. And I got for all of my Audibles. And then, not Audible, Belinda. But it's in Audible.
Belinda.
But Belinda is in Australia, yeah. But the really, really exciting part is that they've just bought my first two self-published books, Midwife in the Jungle and Midwife on the Orient Express.
Oh, fantastic. So,
yeah. So Penguin's actually doing their own audio books now.
Right.
So this last one is done by a new series of people. There's three people speaking the parts.
Yep.
But, So, yes, all of my books are in audio.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, Fiona. You're doing such a fantastic job, and you're an inspiration. Well, all the best with the Bush Telegraph and all your releases coming out later in the year. We can't wait to see what's ahead.
Thanks so much, Pamela.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now.
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.